When a child experiences a physical or emotional challenge, parents obviously seek out the best treatment possible. That search comes with a large factor of trust connected to it, since the medical professionals who are turned to are believed to have the knowledge needed to make the right decisions. That was certainly the hope of my next guest regarding his son's care. The reality, very different. He has turned the ultimate tragedy for any parent into a force for change when it comes to medications versus psychiatric care for children dealing with developmental issues. As we get ready for another school year and the concerns of children being subjected to a quick fix after a quick diagnosis come about, his experiences can become your wisdom and guide. His book is Overmedicated and Undertreated, How I Lost My Only Son to Today's Toxic Children's Mental Health Industry, written by Stephen Francesco. Thanks for being here today, Stephen.
Hello, Chris. It's nice to talk to you.
And Stephen has a couple of websites. Of course, we have them linked over at our site, but I'll give them to you here and now, overmedicatedandundertreated.com and donoharmnetwork.org to get more information and guidance about what we are talking about here. And I guess the obvious starting point, Stephen, is talk about your son, Andrew, what he was, both he and you were dealing with as a family, and what were some of the turns in the path that led to the tragic end?
Well, what happened, Chris, in the winter of 2009, my 15-year-old son, Andrew, died from a sudden serious side effects of a popularly prescribed psychiatric drug called Seroquel. He was a bit sluggish on a Friday night, but in a coma on Sunday, that's 36 hours later, and he never emerged from that coma. Now, Andrew was a lively, funny, and extraordinarily athletic child, but he struggled with mental health problems, as well as, quite honestly, constantly having to change schools because of his behavior. But for the most part, for his age and his potential, I had high hopes. Over the many years, the 8 years in particular, he had many diagnoses. He was diagnosed with ADHD, diagnosed with Tourette's syndrome, bipolar disorder, obsessive-compulsive disorder, as well as combinations of these. And he was prescribed a varied and rotating menu of potent medications during the 8 years where we were struggling with his mental health condition. In fact, he was prescribed over 12 different medications, and many of them in combination with each other, something called polypharmacy. Now, I love my son, and I miss him every day. And his struggle with mental illness lacked a real proven course of treatment. It's not like fixing a broken leg. Mental health is complicated. And anyone with direct experience with mental illness will understand what I'm talking about. And like most parents with a child in crisis, I relied heavily on the expertise and the advice of medical professionals, school officials, and other authority figures. And in fact, Andrew was luckier than many children in this country. We had the financial ability to access the best resources. Yet, in the end, that made no difference, and we lost him. Now, though I felt I did everything possible to help him overcome his mental health condition, I can't help but still ask myself, what could I have done differently? Should I have been less trusting, despite the apparent good intentions of most we got in touch with? And were there larger profit-oriented trends at play that put my son in jeopardy? And that's an important point. Now, let me give you some background about me. I have 30 years in healthcare in my career, 9 years as a senior manager of marketing and strategy for several drug manufacturers, big pharma, and 21 years subsequently running my own independent healthcare consultancy. I really thought I knew the healthcare industry as well as anyone, and for the most part, I respected it. We have a for-profit healthcare system that seemed to be working, at least in the areas where I worked. And where I worked, my specialty was, for example, converting drugs from prescription to non-prescription status. Think of Claritin, for example.
Okay.
And when you do that, you're rigorously examined by the Food and Drug Administration. Now, after his death, aside from a serious period of mourning, I've decided that I had to look at this because I'm a healthcare guy, and what could I have done differently? What did I do wrong? And there are a series of, and this is why I wrote the book, there are a series of aha moments, moments where I thought I understood, and I really didn't, and in fact, what was going on shocked me. I was, you know, now I will say this, Chris, I went through malpractice. So because of malpractice, I got access to all of Andrew's records going back, you know, 8 or 9 years, which parents don't get. I got the diagnoses, I got the rationale for the diagnoses, and I saw, for example, the sloppiness of some of the doctors in terms of their records. Now, generally speaking, I would say there are four areas of importance that I was not aware of. Number one, I was unaware of the serious issue of rampant incorrect diagnosing and then the resultant over-medicating of powerful drugs to children. In other words, what was happening if this drug didn't work, let me change the diagnosis and we'll try another drug. And if that didn't work, we'll try another drug and I'll change the diagnosis again.
Well, just to jump in for a second, Stephen, I was doing some reading and I saw where they wouldn't necessarily, it's not a practice where it's always one replaces another. There's the pile on, isn't there, where, okay, that one isn't working, we'll do this one on top of that one and see what
happens.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And a major point here, Chris, is that almost all of these drugs are prescribed in what's called off-label prescribing. And by that, prescribing off-label means that doctors can prescribe drugs to patients for treatment even though there is no formal FDA approval based on efficacy and safety studies for the therapy areas we're talking about. Rather, it's expected that the doctor closely monitors the patient to review patient safety and efficacy over time and use his professional judgment. So it's an unknown fact in this country that roughly 90% of drugs given to children are off-label because there's no FDA approval on the safety and efficacy for what that drug is being prescribed for. 90%. And I didn't know that. And parents in this country should know that. For example, at the time of my son's death, he'd been getting for over 6 months 50% more of the recommended adult dosage of Seroquel, and yet he was only 15 years old and 120 pounds. But off-label allows that doctor to do that. So he was literally a human experiment, and the cause of his death was excessive amounts of Seroquel that built up in his system. But that's all okay in this country because the doctor's keeping an eye on it. And in my son's case, obviously the doctor was not. But there are other issues here. I was unaware that insurance companies discouraged therapeutic alternatives to drugs, talk therapy, cognitive behavior therapy, all sorts of other types of therapy that are non-drug. Now, I go back to when I was a kid, these drugs weren't around, and I was pretty active. Teachers accepted me. They just say, Steve, calm down, slow down, whatever. The schools also pressure kids to take drugs because they want perfect behavior in the classroom. So you have the practitioners, the prescribers, you know, going right to drugs right away. You have the insurance companies who rule out alternatives to drugs, and of course, the people who diagnose ADHD, for example. There is no real consistent diagnosis criteria for ADHD. According to the Center for Disease Control, here's their signs of ADHD, and it's shocking. Squirming or fidgeting, difficulty getting along with others, talking too much, daydreaming, forgetting or losing things, making careless mistakes, having a hard time resisting temptation. Frankly, that could have been me yesterday.
That could be everyone that's listening right now.
Absolutely. So the criteria is just absurd. It's totally sloppy, unscientific, and you can take my son to one doctor and he would be ADHD diagnosed, and someone else would say something else. So my son had a rotating series of diagnoses. So it's all, frankly, guesswork. And yet the drug, whatever that drug is going to be decided, we're going to try this. Now, so you have the other point is, which I didn't know, and I probably should have, I was unaware that the pharmaceutical industry, drug companies, had been repeatedly fined billions of dollars for illegally encouraging doctors to prescribe drugs to children, drugs that are without the evidence of efficacy and safety by the FDA, and which is illegal. It's illegal to promote these drugs to doctors if there's no FDA approval, but yet it's done. And over a 9-year period from, I guess, like 2005 to 2014, something like that, they were fined $13 billion dollars for illegal promotion of these drugs to doctors. Now, in effect, if you picture a child in the center of a picture, he or she is surrounded by an organized and legal effort to take drugs due to the doctors, the drug companies, the insurance companies, and the schools. And that explains why so many kids today are on drugs. And in the case of, for example, just ADHD, it's estimated that 1 in 10 children between the ages of 7 and 18 will be diagnosed with ADHD and will be prescribed drugs like Ritalin. So that's why I wrote the book. I learned a lot, and it was one of those things that I couldn't learn and not write down. And what has happened is that Over-Medicated and Undertreated, my book, has been recommended by the New York Times. It is also recommended, interestingly, by the Columbia University Med School Department of Psychiatry. And it was just recently the focus of an episode on NBC Dateline. So I've hit a nerve here.
Well, it's called The Facts and the Truth Through the Tragic Experience. And we have to come down the home stretch here with Stephen Francesco with this book, Over-Medicated and Undertreated. As websites overmedicatedundertreated.com and noharmnetwork.org. But when you're looking at an industry, the pharmaceutical industry, where the prescriptions are increasing and impaling children, rising in the triple-digit percentile over the past decade or so, and $13 billion in fines versus the multi-billion dollars that still come in above and beyond that through the perpetrating of this harm to children, What are one or two of the steps that can be taken to battle that monstrosity?
Well, I think, you know, what's going to happen is school starts and suddenly families are going to be besieged with your child has ADHD. So one of the first things, and I have this on the website, donoharmnetwork.org, one of the things I wrote, and again, the whole purpose here is to empower families. I wrote something called 7 Steps on How to Say No, Not Now, on Your Child's First ADHD Diagnosis and Prescription. And what has to happen is changes on both sides of the table, so to speak. The doctor should not be reaching for his prescription pad right away. And at the same time, the families should not be expecting miracles by just having that kid take a drug. So what really has to happen is, number one, the diagnosis has to be done by a fully board-certified child psychiatrist, not a family practitioner or a GP, internal medicine, or even a pediatrician, frankly, unless they've had training. Okay, and most of them have not had training. They do not know how to diagnose, nor do they understand the medication. Then what you do is, if you get someone who is not cooperative and wants to go to the prescription pad, you go to another child psychiatrist, someone who's certified in this area. That's a very important step, because what happens, here's a point that's really for all your listeners. A child does not have ADHD if he's very active in school, but meanwhile at home he's perfectly normal. What's really happening is he's responding to the school environment in some form. He may be having difficulty hearing the teacher. He may be having difficulty seeing the board. In my son's case, he had terrible short-term memory problems, which eventually, by the way, got straightened out. So there may be neurological issues. So with the diagnosis of ADHD and jumping to a drug like Ritalin, you're going to mask those symptoms, and it's not going to make life better because all these drugs have side effects. So number one, cover that first step really, really thoroughly and until you are comfortable. And there are alternatives, coping mechanisms for kids. There are also parent training, helping the parents work with that kid when he's at home so that you find out what to do, you know, get to know your kid better. And it's, medication is not the magical solution, which it is. So that's number one. I would say number two is making sure that if it is genuinely ADHD, and there is a condition called ADHD, not as large as everyone talks about, but there is a condition. Make sure it's the minimal amount of medication, but absolutely rule out all the other alternatives. And I think that's probably the most important thing. And if you go out of ADHD, it's true with all the other diagnosed conditions. For example, later on in life, for example, for ADHD, it's usually young boys. For depression, it's often young girls. And there are lots of reasons why women, girls get depressed. And the last thing you want to do is jump to the antidepressants because they have terrible side effects and terrible withdrawal issues. So the rule of thumb is be suspicious when you're getting into the children's mental health area because it's a swamp. It's got a lot of confusion. There's a tendency to go to drugs. And one of the things that's worth knowing is doctors make more money prescribing than they do providing therapy if they're qualified to do therapy. That's a fact. Reimbursement does not pay as much for therapy as it does for what's called medication management. So there's a pushback that needs to go on, and that's why I'm having the opportunity to talk to you and talk to others, why I've been on NBC Dateline, and above all, why I have the website, which is free of charge. You can buy the book on the website, Overmedicated and Undertreated, but there's tons of free information to help the parent deal with this challenge.
His book is Overmedicated and Undertreated, How I Lost My Only Son to Today's Toxic Children's Health Mental Health Industry. Again, the website, overmedicatedandundertreated.com. Additional information at donoharmnetwork.org. And Stephen Francesco, thank you so much for using your tragedy to empower other parents with the facts and the truth. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Chris, for inviting me.